The Torah does not deny deliciousness, and in a proper context, utilizes deliciousness, the enjoyment of eating, in a form of sanctification. But that is only if the deliciousness is not itself idolized. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, episode 130, Kohanim Dream of Korban. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
Jiro Dreams of Sushi is one of my favorite films and my favorite documentary. David Gelb depicts Jiro Ono, one of the most celebrated sushi chefs in Japan, who, from his tiny restaurant near a subway, produces some of the greatest culinary creations on earth. In my Faith in Film series, I discussed all that we have to learn from Jiro's story and from the other characters to whom the film exposes us. I was therefore surprised to discover that not everyone is as enthusiastic as I am about the film. Thus, when it was first reviewed in the New York Times, the Times critic complained that there was too much focus on the beauty and tastiness of Jiro's food and the adulation of those that surround him, and not enough on how Jiro developed his technique as a chef. Thus, the review reflects, quote, Mr. Ono's cult of admirers in this 81-minute documentary includes a Japanese food critic, the patiently diligent kitchen workers, an awestruck former apprentice, dealers in fish and rice, cooing customers, and two sushi-slinging sons fully aware of the paternal burden of excellence. But then it reflects that, quote-unquote, despite foodie-baiting close-ups, the documentary, according to the article, quote, falls short as a satisfying exploration of craft. And the article continues, like many other such portraits, it wastes valuable time declaring the subject's excellence that could be spent fleshing out demonstration, explanations, context, end quote. To my mind, this criticism is misplaced because, rightly understood, the film is not about how Jiro developed his technique, how he became the famous food creator that received 3 Michelin stars. Rather, the film is about obsession, Jiro's own obsession with deliciousness, and the adulation among others, both chefs and customers, that Jiro's own endeavors in deliciousness inspire. The most famous scene in the film, perhaps, is the one that gives it its name. Jiro reflects, what defines deliciousness? Taste is tough to explain, isn't it? I would see ideas in dreams. My mind was bursting with ideas. I would wake up in the middle of the night. In dreams, I would have visions of sushi. End quote. The film, in other words, is more about his own mind and the minds of others that dream of Jiro sushi than about all of the different steps in Jiro's career. And it is the mindset pertaining to sacrificial food that is our subject for today and occupies our commandment in this episode of 10-Minute Mitzvah. We address a prohibition pertaining to a term known as pigul. Pigul refers to a korban offered in the temple, where one of the necessary rituals was done with the wrong mindset. Whether it was the original slaughtering, which can be done by the one bringing the korban, or the other actions involved, which pertain to the priesthood and the priesthood only, mindset matters. And if, say, the priest preparing the offering engages in one of the central rituals of the rite and has in mind that the animal will be offered on the altar fire or that he will eat from the offering in an inappropriate time, then from that very moment, the offering becomes pigul, which effectively means that it is not allowed to be eaten. It is forbidden. What is usually obligatory to the priest, eating certain sacrificial foods, a commandment that we will discuss in tomorrow's episode, suddenly has become transformed to treif. What are we to make of this, and why should this matter to us today? The answer lies in the fact that sacred eating highlights how in Judaism, body and soul are joined in service of God. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, in a wonderful discussion of covenantal meals, which we will further describe tomorrow, reflected how bodily life, physical life, is sanctified through the very subject of this podcast, the many and manifold mitzvot of the Torah. As he put it, quote, Judaism is almost entirely involved in real bodily existence, in physiological functions. The subjects of the halakha are the parts of the human body. There are 248 positive commandments corresponding to the 248 limbs of the body. The 365 negative commandments correspond to the 365 sinews. A medieval catalog known as the Sefer Mitzvot Katan, the small book of the commandments, arranged the 613 commandments according to the body parts on which they depend. Halacha, Rabbi Soloveitchik continued, aims to sanctify man's body, refine the bestial aspects of human life with all their lusts and drives, and raise them to the level of divine service. End quote. In other words, Judaism does not reject aspects of bodily life such as eating. It seeks to elevate it. Or as Rav Soloveitchik further puts it, quote, the halachic factor, when applied to pleasure-filled, self-satisfied, fleshly existence, an existence driven by untamed instincts and made insensitive by savage lusts, bestows the glory of the Shekhinah on the human body. End quote. Another way of saying this is that we sanctify the enjoyment of food by subjecting this pleasure to the medium of mitzvah, thereby not eliding the pleasure that exists in eating, but rather elevating it. But that, of course, means that the mindset in approaching eating in a covenantal context must be one that is focused entirely on obeying the pertinent laws of God that relate to this very act that is being transformed. The Torah does not deny deliciousness, and in a proper context, utilizes deliciousness, the enjoyment of eating, in a form of sanctification. But that is only if the deliciousness is not itself idolized or become a subject of too much obsession. And, as I mentioned in my lecture on Jiro Dreams of Sushi, even as we admire much about the dedication that the chef applies to his craft in the film, we do, at times, worry at the fact that the creation of delicious food might suddenly become an end in itself. As Roger Ebert noted in his review of the documentary, quote, this is a portrait of tunnel vision. Jiro exists to make sushi. Sushi exists to be made by Jiro. Do the math. Even at the high prices of his premium fresh ingredients, you realize he must be a rich man. But to what end? The existence of his sons are an indication that he has a wife, although we never see her. He must have a home, although we never visit it. There must be hours when he cannot be at work, but the film indicates no amusements, hobbies, or pastimes. End quote. The law of proper intention in the creation of sacrificial offerings highlights that when we, and especially when the priesthood, engages in preparing for the ritual of a korban, what must be sought is exactly what the word implies. Korban, as Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch tells us, is rooted in the word karov, closeness to God. Covenantal eating, as we shall see in our next episode, can itself become a profound medium of closeness to the Almighty. But deliciousness, then, must not define our dreams. Only when we long for closeness to God can the priests in the temple utilize the korban and its deliciousness to engage in sacred dining in the presence of the divine. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.